I'm curious if there's anything about the way that you were raised and the way that your parents raised you that you absolutely want to make sure that you replicate raising Brielle. Is there anything that you really are grateful for specifically and that you want to make sure that you do the same for your daughter?
Oh, that's a big question for me.
Welcome to Somebody's Mama, the podcast where moms unite to share stories, laughter, and wisdom. In each episode, your host, Kate, will dive deep into the world of motherhood, creating a safe space where moms from all walks of life can come together to connect, empathize, and uplift one another. The guests? Well, they're the heart and soul of this podcast, real moms with real stories. Each week, we invite amazing moms from all walks of life to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned mom or navigating the early days of motherhood, there's something here for you. Expect raw, real conversations where vulnerability is embraced and honesty is key. Together, we dive into the heart of motherhood, exploring the messy, the magical, and everything in between. From sleepless nights to triumphant milestones, we cover it all with empathy, humor, and a whole lot of love. So grab a cup of coffee, or maybe a glass of wine, and join us as we laugh, cry, and learn together. Because when you're somebody's mama, you're never really alone. You're part of a community, a sisterhood, where every voice is valued and every experience is celebrated. All right, let's dive into this episode.
So thank you so much, Katie, for joining this episode of Somebody's Mama podcast. I know it's the second time that we're recording this because of some technical difficulties. So really happy to have you back on.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So today I'm joined with Katie Moynan. She's a mom of a little girl named Brielle. And I thought that we will just kind of jump in and start off with you explaining your pregnancy and your birth experience.
Yeah, sure. It was quite something. It's not at all what I was picturing, of course. It never is. But it was kind of like in the movies, and everyone was saying that's never going to happen, but it happened.
Okay.
I woke up at like exactly midnight with like a little bit of water coming out. And I was like, am I peeing myself? What am I doing? And then I got out of bed and the water was gushing and gushing and gushing. So I called the hospital. They said that I could come or come in an hour. I just decided to go. And they kept me right away because like I had already lost my water. Mm-hmm. It took me about 4 hours after I got to the hospital until I actually got contractions. They almost induced me, but I was determined, so I kept walking around to get the contractions to start.
Yeah.
And, for the majority of the time, it was incredibly, incredibly painful. So from 5 centimeters on, I was like screaming bloody murder. Yeah, it was quite painful. But it went very well. She was super healthy. So we were really happy about that. And, I was able to do it naturally like I wanted. People say it has been, probably would have said yes.
Yeah.
And then afterwards I had hemorrhaging, which was pretty scary. And not fun for me either. So, yeah. It was a little dramatic, but...
That is pretty scary. So when you said that if you would have been given the opportunity to have the epidural, or if you would have gone back and had the epidural, that's what you would have chosen. Was there a reason in particular that you didn't get it this time? Like, were you going too quickly, or did you just know that that's not what you wanted to do?
It was more, it wasn't what I wanted to do. I did really want it naturally. And also like when you're in pain, you kind of forget about everything. So yeah, I forgot the epidural had even existed, or it wasn't on my mind at all. So
yeah, I think that's actually a really funny thing to bring up. Like you're so in your zone when you're going through those contractions that it is really nice to have maybe a partner or somebody that knows your birth plan. I mean, for you, you said you didn't want the epidural, and that's amazing that you did it without it. But if you have somebody there with you that if you did want it, knew that, so that when you're in the zone and you don't even realize that there is an epidural, that person could step in and be like, okay, I think maybe it's time, or ask you like, hey, do you want to get this now? Because it's true. You just sort of like lose everything around you and you're so focused on what's going on. I guess it's a survival thing, really. You kind of have to. It's like brain shuts off.
It must be. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So what about your pregnancy? How did you experience pregnancy? Was it a joyful thing for you, or was it a hard experience?
I loved my pregnancy. The only symptom that I didn't enjoy was the back acne, but yeah, but other than that, it was great. Like, I didn't have any nausea. Yeah, I was living my best pregnancy life, getting like naps all the time, 12 hours of sleep every night, eating everything.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't experience any of anything skin related. Was that something that, did you get that right away, or did that come on later on in pregnancy?
It happened pretty quick. I mean, maybe like a month in, I guess.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So I have a couple of different questions lined up. And now I want to move over to wondering about if the way that you grew up or your childhood dynamic, how many siblings you had, sort of shaped how many children you want to have now as a mom.
Hmm.
Had anything to do with choice?
Well, when I was younger, I had two siblings, so I kind of wanted the same dynamic a bit. They were much older than me, though. So I wanted three kids close in age. So that has changed quite a bit. When I was pregnant, we were like all excited and we were like, you know what? Maybe we'll have four.
Yeah.
We're like, let's go. We're on one. We can do it again.
Yeah.
And then I gave birth and we're like, absolutely not. One is enough for us. We love our freedom, so we're really enjoying one, but we can't wait to get back to like doing more things.
Yeah.
Like independently. Maybe it'll change, but right now we're very satisfied with one.
Yeah. Okay. So your perception on how many children that you want definitely changed after you had your first. Is there anything, I mean, you said freedom, is that like the main sort of challenge that you guys are facing now, I guess, as new parents?
Yeah, I'd say so. We do really like being independent, and of course we wouldn't change our lives for anything. We love her. But yeah, I'd say for both of us, one of our core values is freedom, so we do really enjoy it, and we do try to bring her to things that we like to do, but it's not easy as people think it is.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I put on my Instagram, I put a poll on a couple of days ago, and I asked everyone following if they agree with the thought process of just sort of bringing your children along with you and doing the things that you would normally do pre-motherhood. I think that's really interesting what you said, because before I had Georgia, I remember telling my husband, I don't want this to change us. Like, I want to just, we like to go camping. We like to go out to eat. I was like, we'll just bring her with us. And now that I have a daughter, I'm like, absolutely not. Like, those things, unfortunately, at this time are just not enjoyable with a child. And like, it's not her fault. They're not meant to be for children, right? It's like, they're adult things to do. So yeah, it's the freedom aspect of becoming a parent, even though you're told that beforehand. You really just don't know to what extent you lose that freedom for a period of time until you are experiencing it.
100%. And I saw your poll and I was on it for a while and I couldn't answer it because I was like, I mean, yes, I agree. It's great to be able to bring them to things that you want to do. And you can sometimes, but also like, it's totally okay for your lives to be different with a child and it's okay to change. And you don't always have to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And I think also what helps me anyways is like, it's just a period of time. Like you will eventually get those times back as an adult. Your child will become more and more independent as well. But for these first few years, it's just like, we made the choice in our relationship. It's just not worth it. And it ruins the experience, if I'm being honest, like the things that we like to do. So it'll come back.
Right.
I'm curious how your experience with the newborn stage was. How was Brielle as a newborn and how was that transition from pre-motherhood to newborn stage for you?
Not my cup of tea at all. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do newborn stage again. Like, she's at a point where I'm much happier now.
Yeah.
I feel like I've reached like the glow up stage in motherhood, where we're just like, we're starting to get back to our normal.
Yeah.
But newborn stage, neither of us liked. Like, they tell you certain things and you know what to expect, sort of, but being in it is completely different. Like, the lack of sleep, I think, was the biggest thing for me. Like, you're trying to get to know each other more. And she obviously was not sleeping well because they're not in the same rhythm as us.
Yeah.
So, the lack of sleep really messed with my mental health for a while. I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, the sleeping part is so torturous, especially, I mean, there are some people who just have, you know, babies that sleep right from the get-go, and that's amazing, but I definitely did not. I still do not. Did you guys do anything like sleep training, or is Brielle sleeping better now? Like, has that just naturally sort of occurred, or did you guys do anything to help that process?
Well, I'm a little bit in your boat. She's not the best sleeper at night.
Okay.
But she has obviously gotten better from newborn stage.
Yeah.
We didn't do any sleep training. I really went with what worked for us and mostly what worked for her. We tried the whole sleep by yourself in the bassinet. And from day one, she was not having it. And I was like to the nurses, what do I do? Like, she's not sleeping. I am not sleeping either. Yeah, I was at a loss of what to do, and I just decided to co-sleep. And obviously, it's not for everyone, but it works for us, and we still co-sleep. And she loves it, and I honestly grew to love it, too. So,
yeah, we are absolutely co-sleepers in this family as well. And I kind of knew that I was going to co-sleep from day one. We did try the bassinet, like, twice, and I think it was actually more me. Like, I was so anxious as a newborn, like in the newborn stage, that even having Georgia in a bassinet right beside my bed was like too far from my body. I was like, I can't see that she's breathing. So like, we just co-slept from day one, and we still do. And it's definitely, I mean, she's not a good sleeper still, but I don't think that her not co-sleeping would change that. So I'm like, well, it works for us. And I'm a big advocate of co-sleeping.
Right. Yeah. And my doula friend has been like talking about that a little bit recently. We go to workshops and we had a whole topic on sleep, and she mentioned like evolution wise, it's natural for almost every single animal. So absolutely, it makes sense that that's our like natural instinct, is to want to be close to them and sleep with them. So
absolutely. Okay. I have another question, kind of a different lane, and that is about the relationship with your partner. How has the relationship changed?
Well, as soon as she was born, I was like, yeah, this is still the love of my life. And we're going to be together forever. And obviously, I still have that mindset. But I wasn't prepared for the resentment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was not prepared for that. And I didn't think that it would be an issue at all. But when you see them sleeping and you're up with the baby and you're like, oof, how dare you sleep right now?
Yep.
So yeah, there's still a little bit of resentment, but it's getting better. Yeah, over time. But I think that's the biggest issue that I've had to face. Other than that, it's been great. Like, he's a great dad. He's super helpful. But yeah, resentment.
I think that's like the number one thing that moms can probably relate to. And it's so hard not to go there. But I just truly think from a nature standpoint, like a dad will just never understand really the level of like what a mom does, not only just physically, but in our minds. Like our minds don't shut off either. Yes. So the resentment when you turn over and your husband's just snoring away and you're like, even your baby may be sleeping, but you're still like not asleep is really, really relatable, I think. And I mean, we definitely, my partner and I have gone through the roommate stage that you hear all about. It's like you're kind of just two ships passing in the ocean and trying to get things done, and your relationship kind of goes on the back burner a little bit. That's what we've experienced anyways. But yeah, the resentment. I remember the first time my husband came downstairs in the newborn phase after, like, in the morning, and he was like, oh, I'm so tired, I didn't sleep well. And I looked at him and I'm like, if you ever say that to me again, it's not going to be good. Like, do not ever tell me that you are tired for the next like 4 years. You're allowed to be tired, but don't say it out loud in front of me, please. It's not going to end well.
I'm 100% the same way.
That's funny. I think that's super relatable.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if there's anything about the way that you were raised and the way that your parents raised you that you absolutely want to make sure that you replicate raising Brielle. Is there anything that you really are grateful for specifically and that you want to make sure that you do the same for your daughter?
Oh, that's a big question for me. That is big. Well, I mean, my relationship with my dad was pretty difficult, but he did have a big heart. So I'm really hoping to instill that in Bree too, but that's something that's more natural.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, like every parent, they're going to teach you things you can do and things you might not want to do with your child.
Yeah.
But my mom has always been a great mom. I mean, she's very selfless. So I think that I get a lot of my selflessness from her with Brie. And she's a very artsy person, so I would love to carry that on with Brie.
Yeah.
I really am super looking forward to doing arts and crafts with her one day.
Yeah, that's fun.
And yeah, I mean, tough question.
I'm just curious because I know that in my experience anyways, my parents owned businesses when I grew up. I was a restaurant kid. My parents always owned a restaurant. And so I think I inherited the, like, I don't like saying hustle culture because I don't really agree with that, but just like to work hard and like work for what you want. And if you want something, like to go and make that happen. So that is something, just as an example, like I took that from the way that I was raised. And I really want to make sure that Georgia knows that although I hope to be in a different financial position and be able to give her more than maybe what I was given, I still want her to have that instilled in her. Like, no matter where you are financially, you still have to work hard, or not even work hard, but just put in effort, you know, to get what you want and not have everything handed to you. So yeah, that's, I don't know, things from our childhood and the way that we were raised that I would love to be able to instill in her.
Yeah. Like, the ambition. I like that.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I think, I think that maybe the kindness, from my mom, I want to pass down to her, just to, like, my mom's always been super respectful of other people, like, embracing differences. So yeah. I'd really love to teach that to her. That's very big for me, to just be, like, respectful of everyone. So yeah, I'd say that's the biggest one. I'd obviously have to reflect more on that, because I actually didn't think about that much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that's a good one to start with, because the world needs more of that, more kindness, more acceptance of people, to be whoever they want to be. That's a really good one to start with, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious if anything about motherhood in particular, kind of shocked you, and if there's anything about motherhood that you would want to shine light on, maybe for somebody who's about to have their first child or somebody who's in the newborn stage. Is there anything that you were not expecting to happen that happened? And then also, I guess this is a two-part question, if there is, what is something that you have done to help with that? Like, if you could give any advice on how to overcome whatever you weren't expecting.
I feel like the majority of it I probably wasn't expecting.
Okay.
I just feel like people don't tell you the things you'll struggle with, because they don't want to scare you, which I understand, but it's also something I probably would have liked to know. Okay. Like, all the lack of sleep, how difficult breastfeeding is, basically everything. And,
you just wish you were more aware of the things that you were going to struggle with, maybe, rather than people just saying, like, congratulations, you're going to be a mom.
Right. And everyone being like, motherhood is such an amazing thing, and it is in a lot of ways, but it's also very difficult. But at the same time, I don't know if there's anything that can truly prepare you for it.
Yeah.
So, advice-wise, I'm not sure if I'd be able to give my past self or anyone else that much advice, except for just follow what you feel is right. Try to go with your intuition as much as possible, and don't listen to advice unless it's like you had posted about it. Like, having helpful tips is super great, but advice, like, no. Try not to listen to it, because everyone's experience is super different.
Yeah.
Just go with your gut as much as possible.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, you really can't experience it, or you can't understand it without experiencing it. So the advice part is difficult. And actually, that sort of segues into my next question. And that was, the first time that we recorded, I had reached out to you and asked if there was anything in particular that you wanted to talk about. And your intuition and, like, following your gut was one of them. And I'm curious if there's any particular thing that happened where you had to use your intuition, or if that's just sort of your overall view of how you like to parent. And is there any advice that you could give when it comes to following your intuition on how to sort of block out the outside voices? Like, is there anything, if somebody's giving you unsolicited parenting advice, which people love to do, is there anything that you sort of resort back to every time to help yourself block that out?
Right. I think it's something I've developed over time. But I think it's something where you have to be able to trust yourself like there's a lot of stereotypes, there's a lot of things we think we need to live by, even in terms of like having a house and things like that. There's always like the input of outside advice and what you feel like you should be living, but recognizing what makes you happy and what that means for you, what like a happy life means for you, is really helpful in that sense. Because then once you realize this is what I want in my own life, then when people come to you with their own advice, you're like, no, that doesn't work for me. And it just kind of like goes in one ear, goes out the other, like that expression. And you just don't absorb it anymore because you know deep down it doesn't work for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like you have to be able to just sort of bounce people's opinions off, which is it's a skill. It's a real skill to have because people love to give opinions. And I can use an experience for us. We like to take the natural approach in our household when it comes to illness first and sort of leave things like Tylenol or things like antibiotics for emergency situations. And so if our daughter gets sick, my first instinct and my intuition, and now my husband, he comes from a family that's a little bit different when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I grew up in a house that uses homeopathic remedies, and that's how I was raised. So it's a little bit more natural for me. But for example, my daughter had a little bit of an illness. And so I wanted to try and, you know, do it naturally, try and cure it naturally. And people really get offended when I bring that up. And when my daughter had a fever for the first time, I didn't want to give her Tylenol. And we didn't. And people were freaked out. And people, but I mean, friends and family. And it's really hard to block out, especially when it comes from family members who you love and respect and they have a different opinion. It's so hard to not go back and say, am I a bad mom? Like, am I not doing everything that I can do because I'm not shoving Tylenol down my daughter's throat because she has a fever? And it's a skill that needs to be developed because guess what? Her fever went away. She's super healthy and we never had to use Tylenol. And that's just, you know, how we do things in our household. If you use Tylenol, totally fine. I'm not judging anyone. I'm just saying like, that's how we like to do it. But it was really difficult for me. And it made me think like, am I a bad mom because I'm making a decision that's different than maybe the normal decision that people make. So I think trusting your intuition is so important, like you said, but it's definitely hard sometimes.
Right. Yeah. It's something that you definitely need to develop over time. Eventually it becomes more like natural, but I mean, even to this day, when people come to me with advice, usually I block it out, but then you have a habit of second guessing yourself, and yeah. It's hard not to second guess yourself for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The second guessing is my downfall for sure. I second guess most things. But you mentioned before that your breastfeeding experience was difficult. How are you still breastfeeding? And can you tell us a little bit more about your journey when it comes to breastfeeding and how it was difficult for you?
Yeah, I'm very determined about breastfeeding, even though it's not easy.
Yeah.
So I'm still hanging in there. I'm like exclusively breastfeeding still. There was a moment at the beginning where we were substituting it with some formula to make it easier on my mental health.
Yeah.
But then after that month, I was like, you know what? I really want to breastfeed only. But it is a challenge. I mean, they don't tell you how painful it's going to be. Like, your nipple is not used to that. And she didn't have any issues either. Like, she didn't latch super great, but that was the only issue.
Okay.
And I wasn't enjoying it, and she constantly wanted to be basically attached to it. Like, she just loved boobies and still does.
Yeah.
So that was hard to constantly have to breastfeed and it being painful. And now she doesn't as often. She probably does a bit more than the average, but I'm okay with that. It's obviously gotten easier, but she has a bunch of teeth. She's developed more teeth than the average child as well.
Yeah.
So that was an adaptation that I wasn't prepared for. She bit me once and I thought I had lost a nip there.
Yeah.
But luckily I didn't. So I've kind of adjusted the way I breastfeed, like getting it out as soon as I see she's falling asleep.
Okay.
So that way she doesn't like sleepily bite on me. But I mean, it's the natural instinct for them to not bite you. You just have to be aware of that. So I feel like it's gotten much easier over time. After the 6 month mark for me, it was easier.
Yeah. And how old is Brielle now?
She is gonna be 9 months in a few days.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, I can relate to the pain at the beginning of breastfeeding was just like so unexpected. And I think I went into it a little bit naive because my mom mm-hmm. had three children who she breastfed, all three of us, and loved her experience. And now I will say I love my experience as well. But those first 2 weeks, when I tell you, I almost believe that the pain I felt breastfeeding was close to the pain I felt when I gave birth. And that was pretty bad. So I had to stop fully for 2 days and just pump. And we bottle fed Georgia for 2 days at the very beginning. And then, like you said, I was very determined. And I'm a super big breastfeeding advocate. And I'm so, so happy that I stuck through with it. We're still breastfeeding now. She's 18 months. But the biting also, now that she is old enough, like Georgia's fully talking. She like wakes up talking and does not stop talking until she falls asleep. And so she actually asks me to nurse now, which before I gave birth, I remember telling my husband, like, I mean, I had never nursed a child before, obviously. And so I felt like, I think once my child is old enough to like ask me with words to nurse, it's probably going to like creep me out a little bit. Like that's probably when I'll stop. But to be honest, it's kind of nice because she just tells me when she wants to nurse and then she tells me when she's done. But when it comes to biting, she's fully aware now. And sometimes when she's trying to test me, she will look up at me and she'll bite me and then laugh. And it is very hard not to like be like, what are you doing? Like, but it, yeah. Anyways, it's definitely a challenge because it was at first, like you said, like she would fall asleep and like sometimes she'd like go to close her mouth because she's falling asleep and then she'd bite me. But now she like purposely does it and it's like, it's a whole other can of worms. So,
Oh, I get that. Like at the moment, if I feel like a little bite, like you have to hold in your anger, you know, because yeah. it's not their fault. So yeah. You're like, yeah. And anger is only going to make it worse.
But now it is Georgia's fault because she looks at me and she's like, I'm going to bite you and see what happens. And it's like, yeah, it's a very interesting situation because part of me for that reason is like ready to wean her. But also I think something that not a lot of people talk about when it comes to breastfeeding is how hard it is to wean them emotionally. Like I am struggling so much with denying her that when she asks for it, because it's so healthy in so many ways. Like when it comes to, you know, emotional attachment as well as health, like breast milk is like, so it has so many health benefits. So even though I feel sort of physically done and mentally done from breastfeeding, when she's crying because I'm like, no, no more breastfeeding, it's like the worst mom guilt that I've ever experienced so far. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I take this away from her when I know that it is beneficial in so many ways? It's really difficult. Like, I have no problem telling her no when she wants to, like, eat a chocolate chip cookie. I'm like, no. Like, I have no guilt with that because I know it's not really good for her. But when it comes to breastfeeding and she's, like, really upset because she just wants to nurse, I'm like, okay. Like, I guess we're going to nurse until you're six. Like, I don't know. How do I move on from this? So, yeah, it's very, very interesting experience.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about that because I'm not at all at that stage yet, but eventually I'm going to be. So I like hearing your input on it because I kind of feel like I'll be in the same boat when it comes to breastfeeding because I know how healthy it is too. There's so many nutrients in it. So to be like, no, you can't have all these healthy nutrients.
Yeah.
It must be really, really tough.
Yeah, it's really, I wasn't expecting that part of it. Like, I wasn't expecting it to hurt at the beginning. And then now when I'm like wanting to stop it, I wasn't expecting that. And yeah, it's really the taking away something that I know is good for her. And then I think that there's a secondary part as well that I'm experiencing is like, that is my way as a mom right now to comfort my child emotionally. And so when I no longer have that, I'm like, well, how am I going to connect with her and how am I going to comfort her emotionally to that level? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a comfort thing for her at this point. She eats, you know, fully. So it's not as much like needed nutrients wise, but for emotional comfort, I'm like, how do I comfort my child? Like, it's like, I don't know another way to do it. So it's very interesting, the weaning process.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, even to this day when she expresses that she's like upset or uncomfortable, I mean, usually it's always, I want milk. I want booby milk.
Yeah.
So I get you to that extent because even now, like for her, it's the comfort level, but wow, I'm so curious to get to your point. That's something.
Yeah, it's been a challenge. Okay, I have one more question before I have to wrap up. And that is, I know that you've done some traveling with y'all, and I'm curious how that experience has gone for you. And if traveling is something that you want to continue doing with children or after this experience, has your outlook on that changed at all?
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up because we did get back from a long Mexico trip. We were there for almost 3 months. The plan was, and like we had been planning this for quite a while, that whenever we got the opportunity, we were going to spend the winter somewhere warm. And that was going to be our life. We would always do that. But we got there and it was a lot more challenging than we had expected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, we did like our normal daily routine. We would like go out, eat and stuff like that. So it's the same as here. Mm-hmm. But there are some challenges. Like at that time she had her fussy period during supper time and in the evening. So we had to figure out our schedule in that way. And for some reason, we just realized it wasn't as enjoyable as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And we do really like being home, being in our comfort zone, being surrounded by people we love. So like there's advantages and disadvantages to it. And I think we would continue to travel, just probably not as long.
Yeah.
'Cause we both love to travel and we still want to, but we realized that it's maybe not exactly how we pictured it, and that's okay.
Yeah. And when you guys were in Mexico, were you staying in the same spot the entire 3 months, or were you guys like traveling around while you were there?
We spent the majority of the time in one spot, and we were able to travel by bus to nearby towns.
Okay.
But yeah, we mostly stayed in one spot, which is convenient, but also if there's things you don't like about that spot, then you're kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
So I think I would have preferred moving around more, but to things that are more easily accessible, like plane rides, I'm not a big fan of, so I don't think I would take a plane ride very often. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would take layovers because that's brutal with a child.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you travel, you just, like, learn ways to adapt. But I definitely would recommend traveling because it is, like, memories you'll never get back.
Yeah, actually, before we log off, that makes me one more question. That is, you said it's memories that you can make. And another thing that I put on my Instagram was, this was specifically towards Disney, which I know that also this has like a cost associated with it because Disney is notoriously expensive. But when it comes to traveling in general, do you think that it's worth traveling for the memories before your children are of age to actually remember it? And like, what's your stance on that?
I mean, I know people who have like specifically gone to Disney World when their children were still really young. I feel like for me, I personally wouldn't. But then again, like next year we're going on a cruise and we just happen to be stopping in Florida. So we're probably going to go to Orlando Studios. But I mean, my overall opinion on it is do it if you're doing it for yourself and that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to do everything according to what your child wants to do. Like, if you want to go to Disney World, then go for it. But if you're, like, doing it because you want to do it for your child, then I probably would wait till they're a bit older and they can remember it a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I'm on board with that, too. And I think I had said that, too. Like, if you're a person who loves Disney as an adult, then you should go and bring your kids with you because you're going to enjoy yourself either way.
Exactly.
But if you're going to bring your kids, and it's not just Disney, but traveling anywhere. Because I've been going back and forth, like wanting to take a vacation, going to a beach somewhere, but then also thinking about how much work it is really to bring a toddler. And it's not really the vacation that you're thinking about in your head before you go as an adult. Like, you don't get to just like sit on the beach and read a book. Maybe if you brought a grandmother or something with you to watch your child, but vacations for right now are just not how they go. But I do really want to not miss out on making those memories as a family as well. So it's a difficult sort of thing to think about when it's like, do you do it for the memories or do you do it to enjoy yourself, even though maybe it's not going to be that enjoyable? I don't know. It's tough.
Right. And I feel like maybe it wouldn't be what you're expecting, but even in difficulties, there's always ways to be able to enjoy yourself. So if there's like a vacation you really, really want to go on, you want to do it for yourself, like I would recommend doing it. It doesn't have to be for long, and there will be moments where it's going to be really awesome and fun, and there's going to be moments where it's difficult, and that's all right.
Yeah, and that's kind of just parenthood in general.
Right?
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, actually, one more quick thing I wanted to cover, and that is, I covered it last time we talked, but obviously that one didn't air, and that is you being a happiness coach. I want you to explain that a little bit about what you do, because I had never heard of it before. We chatted about it last time, and like I said before, I think it's a really cool thing and a really cool profession. And so can you explain what a happiness coach is and then sort of what you do for work?
Yeah, for sure. I apparently didn't charge my phone enough, so I'll explain it quickly. So I can't say I've ever met another happiness coach, so I'm not sure what others do.
Okay.
But for me myself, I'm heavily influenced by positive psychology. I got into it a few years ago, and I thought it was amazing. So a lot of what I do is influenced by that. But I like to more educate people on what like a happy life could look like to them and to remove those misconceptions of what it should look like. And what specifically can increase your happiness so that you can live a more satisfied life.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I'm mostly educating on social media about that. And I recently started creating some products that are happiness related, like clothing. I want to be able to create more workbooks. I have one, but soon I'll be creating more. And as well as I'm developing a well-being plan for schools.
Cool.
So obviously it's happiness related, but overall well-being as well. Because, I mean, when you have good wellness, you have more happiness. So
yeah,
I want to focus on the well-being of staff and students because the schools have been struggling a lot. Mm-hmm. So I really want to make the whole atmosphere a better one for them.
Yeah,
so that's what I'm working on right now. That's cool. We'll see what else is to come. But I think like the reason why I got into it is because, and I didn't mention this before, but I had depression for a long time. And then when I was able to overcome that, I was trying to figure out what to do with my life. And then that subject came and I realized that I'd love to be able to bring that to other people, not necessarily how to overcome depression because that's a battle. But just little ways that can end up being big ways to increase their happiness.
Yeah, that's amazing. If somebody wanted to learn from you or see, you know, what you're posting on social media, where could they find what are your accounts called?
So everything is under CM Happiness Coach. That's the easiest way to find me on Instagram and Facebook. And I also have a website that's cmhappinesscoach.com.
Awesome. I'm going to link those in the show notes on this episode. I think that's so cool. And I also really love when people go through something in their life and then end up finding, you know, what they want to do in their life and how they want to help others based on something that they've gone through. Because I think that when you're coming from that place, anything that you're teaching, it's just so much more authentic, and therefore people will understand and receive it as well, you know, when it comes from a place of understanding and authenticity, people tend to, you know, take it in more and understand it more. So I think that's such a cool way to spend your time and a cool way to help others as well.
Yeah, I like that too.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to wrap up this episode. I really appreciate you coming on again. I'm hoping that this is going to not be, you know, a technical difficulty as well. Yeah, thank you so much. And I hope that you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Bye.
Bye.